Where are we at?
Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, so please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Audrin. This is Audrin.
Some things never change. Hanging out with a crowd of drunks, man, definitely doesn't change. Congratulations to all the chip takers and the newcomers, and congratulations to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't have a drink today. And I assume the rest of you are here because you have nowhere else to go. And what a place to go, you know, even if you did have somewhere else to go. This is where the winners hang out. And I decided I'd come and talk to a room full of winners tonight. Because when I decided I needed it, well, I actually didn't decide it. John Barleycorn decided when I was done. And if it was left up to me, I'd be still drinking if I thought I could handle it. But I couldn't. I did just enough to get to Alcoholics Anonymous and not enough to kill me. I think another half an hour or so and I'd have probably died because I didn't get here before my time. And I got here on time. There was a spare chair when I got here. My name was on it, I was told, for quite a few years. And when I got there, an old guy told me in San Francisco, he says, your name has been on that chair for quite a few hours, he said. And he says, hold on to it, he says. And if you have to defend that chair and keep it, you better be ready to fight. Because there's a lot of people need that chair. But I still have that chair. And that's why I can honestly say today, tonight, that my name is Audrin and I am a real alcoholic. You know, and I couldn't say that when I got here first. You guys in these rooms, you started telling me about this thing about being powerless. Powerless over alcohol. And that your lives were unmanageable. And I figured it was, you know, I drank a little bit too much sometimes, you know. Sometimes I didn't drink enough because I was always very thirsty in the morning. And be quite honest with you, if I knew I was going to be that dry the next, I'd have drank twice as much the night before. But I always needed and wanted that first drink the next day. The moment I came to, it was my mission was to get a drink. And I had no defense mechanism against that first drink until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I heard you talk about being powerless over alcohol, that your lives were it was unmanageable. And I started identifying with that. Being powerless over something I loved, I adored. It was my DNA, especially from where I come from. You know, that was the first thing you were brought to church and baptized you in wine, actually. You know, if you happen to be uptown. But no, good spring water, you know, they mix it in the poutine and the home brew and the moonshine, and it's all good stuff. But I was introduced to alcohol at a very young age back in Ireland. That's where I'm from. As you gathered, I suppose, I don't have that Tulare brogue quite down pat yet. But I'm working on it, you know. I'm working on it. But, you know, alcohol was always available, you know. It was available to anybody that wanted to drink in Ireland. And back in the 50s growing up, and I was always sipping around the, you know, the old man drank heavily. You know, I don't know if he was an alcoholic, and I don't have any authority to decide whether he was an alcoholic or not. He wasn't in the rooms, and he died from heavy drinking and heavy smoking. And between the two of them, it killed him. I know that for a fact. But my mother, she didn't. She'd nurse a drink, a glass of sherry from one Christmas to the next. And she looked after it fairly diligently. And, that's the only time I ever saw her having a drink, was a glass of sherry at Christmas. But there used to be always people in playing cards. We were farmers out in the country, you know. We didn't have television back then. We had an old battery ran wireless, they used to call it, with all wires hanging out of it. And, you just turned it on for the news. The old man wouldn't allow you listen to anything else, only the news. After that, it was locked up, because you had to go 2 or 3 miles to get a new battery, to get a battery charged when it ran down. But that's going back a couple of years, I can tell you that. But I just told you now, I was an alcoholic, and now I'm telling you how old I am, sort of. But that's all right. I'm okay with that today because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, the first drink that I had in adult company was on a train in Ireland, and there was a crowd of soldiers on the train. They were coming back from being overseas with the United Nations peacekeeping in I think it was the Congo, but they bought us some beer. We were 3 or 4 of us were only about 12 and a half, and they bought us some beer, and then they said, would we like some whiskey? Of course I said I'd like beer and whiskey. A couple of the other guys just had a beer, and then they threw up. And I had whiskey and more beer and more whiskey, and these soldiers were having a great old time looking at these kids falling around the movement of the train back then, you know. It was one of those big puffin' billies, you know. The environment wasn't too well respected. And but between the movement of the train and my shots and beers, I was looking for the window. Found the window anyway, and that was my first introduction to public intoxication. And to tell you the honest truth, there was quite a few after that. So I didn't stop. The other guys, two of them, I don't think ever drank again. And two more are dead today, because they didn't stop, they didn't get to the rooms. And they were alcoholics, I guess. But I made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm very grateful for that. But growing up in Ireland, into the 60s, it was rock and roll and devil music and all that good stuff, and good old whiskey and Arthur Guinness. You had all types of variety. Heavy into the music, traditional Irish music. That music is so powerful, if you played it next to a graveyard, they'd get up and dance. And speaking about graveyards, I was just back in Ireland there for a couple of few weeks, and I happened to go to a funeral. Someone in the village died, and we buried him anyway, but myself and this other guy were walking through the graveyard, and he was reminiscing about the guys that we knew that were dead, and their names were on the headstones, and he was naming them out, and he says, oh my God, he says, look at all these friends of ours who have gone before us. And he was very upset about it, and he says, but he says, they were powerful drinkers. I says, they were, John, powerful drinkers. And every graveyard in Ireland is full of powerful drinkers. And it's the truth. Those guys never made it to the rooms. Every one of the guys in our age group that we looked at killed themselves drinking. They never, whether they heard about Alcoholics Anonymous or not, I don't know. But I found out since I came here that I don't have to go to the graveyard. It's not part of the passing grades to become a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's nothing tells me in these rooms that I have to lose my house. When I came in here first, I didn't have a house. I didn't have a penny to rub against another penny. But I heard people talking about they lost their wife, they lost their kids, they lost their house, they lost their jobs. I didn't have a job either. I couldn't hold a job. And these were career people. But there's nothing in Alcoholics Anonymous that tells me that I have to lose that stuff if I have it. I don't have to lose it. All I have to do is to be willing to say today that I'm powerless over alcohol and that I'm an alcoholic. And I'm very grateful I found out what the hell was wrong with me. I found out that I have a disease. I did not know from... Nobody could ever tell me why I drank the way I did, why I acted the way I did, why I craved that drink, as I said, when I came to in the morning. No one could tell me that. I have a brother-in-law, he's a doctor, and he used to tell me when I'd go back, he says, I got an injection, he says, I'll give you the injections anytime you like, and you'll never drink again. Yeah, that's what he said to me, you'll never drink again. I said, no, I don't want those injections. Because I wanted to keep drinking. I thought that I had it under control. I don't know what type of needles there were or injections, but he's still alive today and he's close to 90. But he still does not know. He asks me every time I go home, he says, are you still going to those meetings? What goes on there? I says, a lot of those meetings are held at midnight, I said. And we get around in a dark room and we have all types of conversations with strange people who have gone before us. But I tell him, no, I said, look, I said, it'll do you good, to do your heart good, I said, even in your latter years, to go to a meeting and find out how we stay sober, how alcoholics stay sober. It's not a place for normal people, because normal people are like yourself. They can't figure it out, how a bunch of drunks can get together and keep one another sober. But all I have to do is to be willing to get up one day at a time. There's no such thing as forever in this program. I never found anything that said, you have to do this forever. I just got to do it for today. And I'm not that smart a guy, but I can figure out today. If I don't drink today, you know what? I'm one of those guys I was talking about that I came to hang out with for an hour. I'm a winner. That's what I am. Because for this alcoholic not to drink is on a winning streak. Not to drink today. And everything else that happens to me today is just part of everyday living, part of everyday life. And that's one thing I could never handle, was everyday life. Part of living, especially with me. Damn it, I was the most cantankerous son of a bitch that I ever met. And I met a bunch of, lots of those a-holes in the bars. And then they told me in here that we are a bunch of people that would never mix. But I mixed with all types of guys like you out there. And I drank with them and I fought with them and we made up and we hugged and we said, hey man, you're the greatest. I love you. I love you. Next minute we're rolling around the street. Main street of our village. You know, back then there was only a few bicycles used to go up and down it. But now it's a main thoroughfare. But you wouldn't roll around too long on it now. But that's what this program is. I didn't come here looking for God. You know, I didn't come looking for a God. Especially your God. Or his God. Or their God. I didn't come looking for friends. I came here and I didn't be honest with you. I didn't know what the hell I was looking for. But I found it. I found the best friend that I could ever possibly find, and that was myself. I can hang out with this old guy today and not find it necessary to pick up a drink. Because I'm the dude that made me drink. I drank because I could not stand myself. And the first thing was told to me when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was, welcome. And I says, okay, thank you very much. And here's a coffee. When I spilt the bloody coffee. And they said, keep coming back. If you hang around here long enough, those shakes will disappear. And you know what? They did. Because I took that guy's, took him at his word, I kept coming back. And that's how it works for me today. And that's how I see it working for all you guys here. Like, I go to a lot of meetings around Visalia, around the area, trying to pick up this accent you have. But I think some of you are speaking in forked tongues. I don't know. I'm having a hard time with it. But I go to a lot of meetings and I see you all at meetings. So this must work. As I said, I'm not that smart of a guy, but I can sort of figure that one out. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous first, I went to a lot of meetings. I was after getting out of rehab, and I was living in a halfway house in San Francisco, the Henry Olaf house. And I had to go out every day and look for a job, or they were going to can my ass. I was going to get fired again. But I used to go to about 3 or 4 meetings a day. And I used to say to myself, wow, how do all these guys have the same story? They all tell me it works. They all tell me to get a sponsor. They're all saying, work the steps. They're all saying, get a higher power of your understanding. Where do they meet that these guys have everything on the same page? They all got the same bloody story. It must work, I said to myself. They can't all be bullshitting me. There must be a flaw in it somewhere. I found out by hanging around these rooms that there is a flaw in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that is, if I don't come back, if I don't keep coming back, that's the flaw of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I don't get up in the morning and say, hey, you're an alcoholic and your life's unmanageable, you need to plug into the higher power and need to get onto your spiritual connection for today, just for today. And that's what I did this morning. I was watching TV one morning, actually, before I went down to my home group, actually, is, oh God, they're a high class bunch. 7 a.m. drunks only on Bridge Street. They're real uptown, baby. And I was watching the news one morning, and there was this beautiful looking lady being interviewed. And the interviewer said to her, there was a time in your life when you had a bad problem with alcohol. She says, that's right. And he says, how are you handling it today? Well, she said, I did the same things this morning as I did 20 years ago. So I says, I need to get to a meeting. And I finished reading my literature and connected with my higher power and went to a meeting. She didn't say she had gone to a meeting or was going to a meeting, but I knew what she was talking about. Because normal people don't do the same things every morning for 20 years. And my sobriety date is the 5th of November 1980. And I did the same. Thank you. I only use that tonight as a reference to, I got there one day at a time. And no matter how long I'm around these rooms, I only have today. And if I forget who I am, what I am today, I am closer to my first drink than I realized. And that is the flaw in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll take that back. That's not the flaw of Alcoholics Anonymous. The Alcoholics Anonymous program is flawless. It's, I have flaws. I'm the person with the disease. I'm the person who likes to take control. I'm a control freak. of your business, of your life. I know exactly what's good for you. If I met you in the bar, I knew what you should drink. I tell you, I advise you, Hennessy brandy is what you should be drinking. And I will have the same. I always knew what was good for the other guys. But I know what's good for me today. This program of Alcoholics Anonymous has saved my life. Saved my life. I work good jobs. I traveled around. I worked in a business, mining, underground, tunnels and gold mines. And you know, you work on a job and it lasts 3 years, 4 years. And then you have to go. You have to leave town, which was great. Because you got off and you met new people. This was an old wives' tale. You meet new people. That job finished, you went to the next job. These guys that was on that job, which they're all on the next job. We were tramp miners, and that's what we did. We went from place to place. And then I started working on pipelines, and I went to Alaska in the 70s. And I worked 3 years in one of the biggest jobs in the world. My take-home pay was probably $1,200, $1,300 a week after taxes. And I worked there 3 years and I had to borrow $100 to make my fare to get my ass out of there. And I know guys that work those jobs and they set themselves up in business in San Francisco today. And they're very successful people. But they had a flaw. They didn't drink. That was their flaw. That's what I said. Those guys don't know how to live. But in actual fact, I could not live without alcohol. Believe me, I tried not to drink. I tried not to drink so many times. I went to a camp in Alaska to dry out, away up in the Arctic. And would you believe who my roommate was? He's a guy that everybody looks for in camp. He was the bootlegger. And I went up there to dry out. He says, "Help yourself." He said, "Keep it quiet. Don't overdo it." Man. He was a normal dude, you know. He was a businessman. He didn't know who he was telling not to overdo it. I just got to camp. I didn't go to work the next day nor the day after. And then they found my dead ass and they ran me out of camp. So that's what drying out in the Arctic does for a guy like me. But, you know, I didn't learn from that crap. I went to another job, went back to the Union Hall, got another job, and went there, was 6 weeks without a drink. It was the worst 6 weeks that I put in on any job in all my life. No one on that job knew how to do anything. They were all assholes. From the project manager down to me. Couldn't go any lower than me. But I was even an asshole to me. And another Irish guy came into camp and he had a gallon of Chivas Regal. So, Jesus. He said, "Would you like to have one drink?" I said, "No. But I'll have a couple." And I was on the plane the next morning. I could not have one drink. But I tried it again. I went to Saudi Arabia where they throw the key away. That was the longest sobriety, the longest dryness I had before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, 14 weeks. And I was back in Ireland and I decided I couldn't go back to America. You guys were killing me. You had bad alcohol in this country. You weren't giving it enough time in the still. You needed to run it again. But anyway, I said, "I'm going to go to the Middle East. No alcohol." Great. My mother was delighted. Oh, man, she did a round of the beads, wore it out. Woo! She was great. He's changing. He's going to turn a new leaf. with the Arabs. So I went out there, I had 14 weeks, no drink, 7 days a week, long hours, well fed. Boy, I came out of there, I was all buffed up, we're working hard, suntan to beat the band, lads, you know, and I was flying back Saudi Airlines into London, into Heathrow. I says, I'm going to have one pint before I get the plane to Dublin, Ireland. So I went in and I ordered one pint of Carling Black Label, and oh wow, man, heaven had arrived. I barely remember ordering the second pint. I didn't get to Dublin for 4 days. I had bust ribs, I had black eyes and teeth all scowers in my head. I guess I told a few of those English guys in their pubs what I thought of them. Something similar like that might have happened, but my God, I arrived home and my poor mother, God bless her, she says, wow, those Arabs are very tough people. I says, they are indeed, Mammy, and I got into a hell of a fight with a sheik. Yeah. But anyway, nothing changed in my life until I walked into Alcoholics Anonymous. And nothing. And I tried all types of stuff. When I left Ireland first, I got a job the first night I arrived in Canada. I went to Canada. First was my first big adventure. Walked in through the immigration and I saw this big green sign and it said, drink Canada dry. Yes. And I says, holy shit. I go to work straight away. There's a couple of Dublin fellas on the plane with me and we went to work that night. And I was pissed off with my mother and father that I wasn't born over there. Because it took me 20 years to get to Canada. And a lovely job waiting for me. But you know, I nearly killed myself in Canada. I wanted to go, always wanted to go to the Yukon. And I went up there on a job on a, you know, this is what alcohol used to do for me. I was good, making good money in Toronto, quit a job for a quarter of the money in the Yukon. One of my bucket lists to go to the Yukon. And wow, sun never set and the bars never closed. I don't know, but paradise again had arrived on my, I arrived on the doorstep of paradise. But I went into a bank manager one time in Whitehorse in the Yukon and I had been drinking around Whitehorse for quite a while and I ran out of money and I asked him for $10,000 loan. And he listened to my spiel. I was going to invest it in a gold mine that was way out in the bush somewhere. I heard about it in the bar. And I still remember the name of a Kanzak mine. It was only a little village out there. I don't know whether there was a mine in it or not. Someone told me there was. So I was going to invest this 10 grand. And he says, look here, he says, Irish. He says, you were after drinking all your own money and now you want to start drinking mine. He says, get your ass out of here. So that was the end of my mining investments. But you know, I ended up back in New York and well, I went back to Ireland one more trip and then my mother was she'd always say to me when I'd get home, she says, give me your passport. So I'd have to give her the passport. I had to. It's like going to the Middle East. You had to hand up your passport. You had to check in and check out. But she says, I want this because I know you might be missing for a week or two. And I know you're still in the country when I have this. So it was sort of her guarantee that I didn't leave without saying goodbye. Because I was prone to do stuff like that. But I made it to New York. And a guy in a barman, handed me my change one night after I got a couple of drinks. And he had this little thing rolled up in my change, in the dollar bills. And I felt it and I put it in my pocket. I didn't know what it was. I thought it might have been, he was slipping me some dope or something, you know. So I went into the bathroom and read it. And I really didn't understand it. I really didn't know what it meant. But it meant that I shouldn't be drinking. I didn't know what it was until I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. He handed me the little pre-emblem. And I remember seeing the word Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was pissed. I went down and I said to my drinking mate, I says, hey, screw this asshole, don't give him a tip. Don't give him a tip. So we bust out of there anyway, and he says, what the hell happened in there? I said, I have a bunch of evangelical bastards, I said. He's trying to convert me to some strange religion. Oh, he says, we'll never go back in there again. He was another one of those lads that honors the Pope. But anyway, when I knew I was done, I was up in Shaver Lake, and I had a bottle of vodka, and I was looking for a job up there, and I was so unemployable. Do you know what? The workhouse wouldn't even take me in. And I was down on my knees, not on my knees because I wanted to pray. I was on my knees because I had the dry heaves. I was after drinking my last drink, and I shot it back up. I ran it twice. Doesn't taste as good the second time round. And I said, if there's anybody out there or anything, I need help with my drinking right now. Within an hour, I had a seizure. I was in an ambulance heading for down the hill. Somebody called the paramedic cops that a guy had had a heart attack. They landed me in the community hospital, and they had a rehab center there. And I had quit my job back in New York. This will just show you the chain of events that were lining up for me and my drinking. And this higher power that I never knew anything about until I got here. They checked back with the union hall, and I had a break in service when I was overseas, and to see had I coverage for this treatment center, because I didn't know how many hours I had. I was supposed to have a certain amount of hours to have full 100% medical coverage. I had 4 hours to my credit when I quit that job in New York, pissed off, drunk one morning, said I'll never come back to this dungeon again after my fifth trip about. And I left New York, and I had 4 hours to my credit. Otherwise I wouldn't have been covered, and I had no money, and I might never have gotten to Alcoholics Anonymous. So that's what was happening in my life to get me to here. Something was lining me up, and I know today it was my higher power. But the only flaw in this program, for anyone that's struggling with it, is me. This is the guy with the flaw. When I don't respect Alcoholics Anonymous and respect the doors being open and the coffee is on and the light is on and there's somebody there with a warm smile and a handshake, whether I need it or not, they'll tell me to keep coming back, or whether I want to or not. And I only get out of this program what I put into it. I wouldn't be sober today, I guarantee you, unless I took that guy's advice when he told me to keep coming back, that it works. It does work, but I have to plug into my higher power, my spiritual connection on a daily basis, and I have to keep in contact with my higher power daily. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I talk to another drunk in or out of recovery each day, somewhere along the line. Whether it's on the street and a guy looks lost, I'll say, how are you doing? How are things? Would you like to change your life? No, asshole, but that's okay. He knows there's a solution somewhere. Because somebody offered me the solution. Somebody 12-stepped me and told me about this wonderful program. And that's why I keep coming back. And I tell you, it's... I can't say enough about Alcoholics Anonymous. And the only reason, if I took a drink today or tonight, there's only one reason that I picked up that drink. And that is, I forgot what I am. I'm an alcoholic, and I can never shine away from remembering that I'm an alcoholic, one day at a time. I'm not an alcoholic yesterday, I'm not an alcoholic tomorrow, I'm a real alcoholic today. And if there's nobody in this room didn't get anything out of what I had to say. There's one person did, and that's me. I need to hear me say that I'm a real alcoholic on a daily basis. The 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, a sponsor who I still call, he's still my sponsor, and he is 3 years on me. We drank together in New York, we drank in San Francisco, we drank in Alaska. And he did go to the Middle East also after he left Alaska. And he got drunk after he came back from the Middle East, and he ran his truck into two cop cars in San Francisco. And he's sober 3 years longer than I am. And we still talk and laugh about the bad old days. We got away from calling them the good old days. The good old days are what I'm living today. This is one of the best days of my life, because I didn't drink today. It doesn't matter what happens as long as I don't drink. And if I work the program of Alcoholics Anonymous on a daily basis, nothing can fail me today. No matter what goes on, it's meant to go on the way it is, as long as I keep my grungy fingers out of the whole affair of life and just keep turning up for Bridge Street most mornings. Some mornings I have to watch a game of football or two, you know, but that's part of life too. Life just keeps on trucking. But you know what? If you don't think this was a good meeting, I know where there's a hell of a meeting better than this one. It's the next one each and every one of you get to. So don't ever forget, the next meeting is the best one. Thanks, guys. Love you all.